Welcome to The Burt Cohen Show. And we have a couple of different guests for today. The first one, we'll be talking about Hillary Clinton's trip down below the border, as was used to be said. And then on the second part of the show, we'll be talking about what we as a community can do to lift ourselves up. And let's begin right away with our guest today is Mark Weisbrot. Thanks very much for being with us today, Mark.
Thank you.
And let me tell the listeners a bit about Mark. He's a co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington. He received his PhD in economics from the University of Michigan and has written numerous research papers on economic policy, especially on Latin America and international economic policy. He writes regular columns distributed internationally, and his opinion pieces have appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, the LA Times, and in almost every major U.S. newspaper. He appears regularly on national and local TV and radio programs, and now on the internet, I'm sure. He's also president of Just Foreign Policy. Well, again, thanks for being with us. Latin America, it hasn't been a lot in the news lately. It certainly was in the early 80s when there were various wars in Nicaragua and El Salvador. And of course, we hear about the bad guy down in Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. And for most of the 20th century, Latin America was pretty much under the control of the United States. And now it's increasingly emerging as a power block with its own interests, an own agenda, and some real power. And our current Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's trip comes just a week after 32 Latin American and Caribbean nations formed a new organization that will exclude the U.S. and Canada. Tell us about that organization. Did Bush's policies and Reagan policies, now continuing under Obama, spur this development where there's a new organization that basically kicks us out?
Yeah, there's no doubt that this process has been going on for about a decade, where Latin America has become more and more independent of the United States. It's more independent probably than Europe is right now, which is a big, drastic change since, you know, over the last 150 years, there's never been anything quite like this. But the policies of the Bush administration, and as you said, work continued by the Obama administration, definitely were a motivating factor in creating an organization, a hemispheric organization that excluded the United States and Canada, and as a replacement, really, for the Organization of American States. And that's because they've used the Organization of American States too many times now to block the interests of the rest of the region, especially the strong interest they have in having democratically elected governments and not having military coups overthrow them. The latest example was in Honduras.
Yes.
Where, as you know, the United States blocked the OAS from taking stronger action to restore the democratically elected president. So I think that was kind of the last straw for a lot of governments. And even the Mexican government, which is a right-wing government and probably one of the most friendly ones, they led this, helped lead this effort, because they too have to have, for the political purposes and domestic political purposes, have to show an independent foreign policy as well.
Because they have to get along with their neighbors, and economics certainly tends to lead international policy around by the nose, and for so long, the U.S. held, I guess it could be called, hegemony over the Latin American nations and was absolutely dominant over it. And they were so dependent on us for exports and imports, I guess largely exports. But what has changed recently? Is it, and we certainly need to talk a bit about Honduras, because a lot of people, you know, it really wasn't in the headlines what happened there. Not that many people know about it. But economically, are there new trading partners being set up, and that they don't have to be so dependent on the U.S. and Canada?
Well, South America wasn't that dependent anyway. You know, only about 15% of their exports go to the United States. So that's why you saw that that's where most of the independents, the first elections where you had independent governments were in Venezuela, Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Ecuador. That's the strongest, most independent bloc, and it is partly because they're not that integrated with the U.S. economy. And they're further away, and you know that expression about Mexico, so far from God and so close to the United States, they say. And that was, you know, obviously Honduras' problem too in this latest coup. 600 U.S. troops there. It was very hard for people to be able to resist that dictatorship, because they're so close to the United States. And so I think that you have that, but it is, again, you know, you now have left governments also in Central America. I would include all, even Guatemala is a social democratic president for the first time in 50 years, and then El Salvador and Nicaragua. So these are the countries where, you know, our government actively supported this slaughter of hundreds of thousands of people. And in Guatemala, it was later determined to be genocide by the United Nations. And this was supported by our government all through the, well, before the 80s in Guatemala, but mostly in the 80s in El Salvador and in Nicaragua. And they fought very hard to keep these countries within the U.S. control. Right. And they've lost quite a bit now even there, but most importantly, they have lost most of South America.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing how the U.S. has been so behind all these brutal dictatorships. And it seems that in the moment, that gives the powers that be in the United States the powers that were in Central America and in South America. But it doesn't last too long. People tend to remember if a foreign imperialist nation came in and wiped out and, you know, slaughtered thousands and thousands of people and, you know, their relatives and friends, it's just not good for long-term relations. Does Hillary Clinton get that? Is she different enough? What are her prospects as she travels around Uruguay, Chile, Brazil, Costa Rica, Guatemala?
I think she's doing worse than Bush did in 2005 when he went down there and, you know, he had a humiliating experience and ended up leaving Argentina a day early just to get out of town because there were huge protests and riots. And but he was more, I think, humble about it. He didn't say the kinds of things that she's saying. I think she doesn't have the protests or riots because President Obama has a positive media image in Latin America. So you don't get people in the streets. But the governments, I mean, she's been very offensive to the government. She goes to Argentina and tells them what a great success Honduras has been. Ah. How we resolved this conflict without violence, neglecting the fact that there's been all these assassinations even since the so-called election that they had there in November. Just, you know, in the last couple of weeks, they've murdered opposition activists, and telling this to the Argentines who are on the other side, announcing this there, and then going and telling the Brazilians, you know, she threw in a bunch of insults about Venezuela when she met with the Brazilians. And that's kind of like, you know, going to a party and telling the host how much you don't like their friends. You know, it's a very rude thing to do diplomatically because you're using their country for a platform to attack one of their close allies. You know, Brazil and Venezuela have very strong relationship. Lula and Chavez meet every 3 months to coordinate their economic integration, for example. And Lula has supported and defended Chavez repeatedly now for, you know, practically 8 years.
Wow.
And, you know, to say these things and then to tell the Brazilians that we want you to change your policy on Iran? Well, you know, even if that's what they wanted to do, it would be smarter to say that privately rather than to, you know, to say it publicly and expect that they're going to say, oh, yes, whatever you say, you know. So this, to me, is very clumsy diplomacy on her, or lack of diplomacy on her part.
Wow. It's surprising. I have been surprised a number of times. I mean, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, these are bright people. These are not, you know, the George W. Bush who can be led around by the, you know, Dick Cheney's of the world who clearly knew what they were doing. The American interests, it would seem to me, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I would think American interests are really to do business with these guys, to have a good, better than we've had in a long time, working relationship with Latin America. Because, you know, these people, they want to go their own way. They like the concept of governing themselves. I know it's probably hard to believe that other people would like to govern themselves too, for some of the powerful corporations that have just held sway, the sugar interests and all that, for so long. But it's just, what is Hillary Clinton trying to get out of this? What is her stated purpose? What do you think her real purpose is?
Well, it's pretty clear what it is. I mean, they have a strategy. It's a very Cold War kind of strategy. It's very focused on Venezuela. And, you know, many times they give the other countries that they don't like a pass because they want to focus on Venezuela. They want to. And it's not that Venezuela is actually that different. Even Chavez is not that different from, say, Evo Morales or Rafael Correa. They've all said similar things about the United States and about imperialism and things like that. It's just Venezuela has oil. That's the key thing. That really is the determining factor. I mean, obviously, Chavez says a lot of things that he shouldn't. But it really, ultimately, I think one of the reasons he does that is because he knows that it doesn't affect U.S. policy. I mean, I think it's still a mistake on his part, and since it does affect his image in the media, you know, which is very negative.
Yes.
But he knows that U.S. policy is going to be against him and is going to try to undermine him and his government no matter what he does. And that's been demonstrated so many times. I mean, when Obama came to Trinidad for the Americas Summit last year, Summit of the Americas, and shook hands with Chavez, he was all, receptive and wanted to have a new relationship and thought maybe this was it, you know. And they immediately started, they did everything they could to make sure that that wasn't clear and went on the attack again. And right now they have a huge offensive against Venezuela, you know. And their strategy is basically, it's based on this idea. It's a very Cold War, like I said, a strategy. You have some governments who are you want to get rid of, you want to undermine, you want to destabilize them. And then you want to try and get the other ones, at least nominally, on your side. And she doesn't quite understand that that's not going to work. Hmm. That it hasn't worked for, it didn't work for 8 years under Bush, and it's not going to work any better for her.
It's very surprising to me. Bert Cohen here on The Bert Cohen Show. We're talking to Mark Weisbrot, co-director of the Center for Economic Policy Research and also president of Just Foreign Policy. And just for a moment, what is Just Foreign Policy?
Well, Just Foreign Policy is a group that works more at the grassroots level to try to change U.S. foreign policy by organizing people to build pressure on these kinds of issues, to, you know, through the Congress, especially,
sure.
To try and promote a foreign policy that represents the interests of the majority of Americans instead of these kind of narrow interests that do the kind of things we're talking about here.
Yeah, it doesn't seem all that complicated to me. You want to befriend people who want to be your friends, who want to do business with you, but you don't do that by berating them, by insulting them. It so clearly hasn't worked to our advantage for such a long time. I think about the when Evo Morales was elected president of Bolivia, I spoke to I forget who down in Bolivia, and I asked this expert, would he have gotten elected were it not for George W. Bush? And this person laughed and said, yeah, probably, but it sure helped. I mean, when people are attacked like that and defended, and the, you know, the indigenous people of Bolivia haven't had a chance to participate in their own government and their own resources, and there are significant resources in Bolivia, natural gas, among others, of course people are going to stick together. As you say, we walk into a party and start insulting the people at the party. Not a good idea. And as we speak, it seems like the situation between Argentina and the good old UK, which seems to have been our model for imperialism over the past couple of centuries, over the Malvinas, as they're called in Argentina, or the Falklands Islands, as they're called in formerly Great Britain, the UK has unilaterally decided to explore for oil offshore the islands. What is the sentiment of Latin leaders on this? And what is the U.S. doing in this renewed struggle over the Malvinas between Argentina and the U.K.?
Well, you know, that's a case where Hillary actually did throw something to the Argentines, and she said that they should talk, that the U.K. And Argentina should talk about it, as the U.N. has said. They should negotiate, and this really infuriated the British, and so that was the one, I guess, positive part of the trip. And I don't think that it's going to mean very much, though. I don't think that the United States will pressure the UK in any way, or will play any kind of mediating role. I think that this was done, you know, as part of a kind of divide and conquer strategy to try and get Argentina, you know, try to pull them more towards the United States in this, in their own battle, you know, the State Department's battle against the other social democratic governments. And so I don't think it's going to go anywhere. But that was the one place where, and it's the first kind of positive overture that I can think of since Obama went to Trinidad in April of last year.
Yeah, well, that's, people did vote for change here. They wanted a different policy, one that we can have something that's mutually beneficial. I honestly believe it has to be based on respect. They are not our little brothers, as, you know, Teddy Roosevelt instituted that policy over 100 years ago. And, you know, we've kind of been there and done that, and it hasn't worked real well. And we talked a little bit about Honduras. And there is, it was a horrible situation last summer where there was an overthrow of the democratically elected president. And people there had hoped that President Obama's policy would be different and would not recognize the military installed government. And we sort of, Obama kind of danced around that and was pointedly ambivalent toward the military coup that overthrew the government of Mel Zelaya, or Zelaya, in Honduras. And so the U.S., maybe you can just fill us in a little bit, because as I say, it hasn't, you know, I mean, the healthcare reform has been taking all the oxygen. And tell us a little bit about that situation and how that has affected the current situation throughout Latin America.
Well, the, you know, as you said, the democratically elected government of Mel Zelaya was overthrown on June 28th. And, you know, if you saw the first statement that came out of the White House when that happened, that was really all you needed to know for the next 6 months. You could predict everything that the United States was going to do. Because the first statement that came from the White House, unlike every other statement in the entire world, did not condemn the coup at all. It didn't say anything bad about the coup. This was a military kidnapping the president and flying him out of the country, a democratically elected president. And the statement that came from the White House said, we think all parties should work together to resolve this. Didn't say anything like, you know, this is wrong.
Uh-huh.
And they knew about the coup well in advance, you know. In fact, they said that they were talking to the military right up to the day of the coup. Now, their story is that they were trying to persuade them not to do it, and we don't have any information to know whether that's true or not. But we do know that they were talking to him, so this was not a surprise. So they knew, since they knew in advance, this was a very deliberate statement. And in the diplomatic world, and to everyone who was paying attention, this was a way of saying, we support this coup, because that is what it meant in diplomatic language. And of course, within hours, they had to say something else. They had to actually condemn it, because the whole rest of the world did. But just that one moment, and given that nobody from the White House was fired for writing that statement,
right,
you knew what side they were on, and that's how it really unfolded. Basically, what they did was they, you know, made a number of statements against the coup, did some sanctions that really had no impact whatsoever, and refused to take measures that would have had an impact, like freezing their assets and freezing the assets of the leaders of the coup that were here in the United States. These were measures that, by the way, Bush's father even took when against the dictatorship in Haiti, when Aristide was overthrown the first time. So in 1991, you know, George H.W. Bush actually froze the millions of dollars of assets of the government and gave it to the government in exile.
Hmm.
And here, the United States government was doing everything it could to block the Organization of American States and other countries from trying to help restore the democratically elected government. And that cost them a lot. I mean, that was a huge eye-opener for all the democratic governments in South America, you know, including Brazil and Argentina, and everybody who thought that maybe Obama could be different. They saw this as horrible, and they took it as a personal threat, some of them, especially in Ecuador and in Paraguay, for example, where you even saw at that time, you know, during those 6 months, there were threats from the military against the elected government. He had to, Fernando Lugo, he had to get rid of some of his chief army military officers, because this is how the Latin Americans saw this. This was a return to the dark days of the past when, you know, the local elite with the U.S. support could overturn the results of an election through a military coup. And here was the United States was really an obstacle to resolving the situation. So that was how they saw it, and I think that was the huge part of the impetus towards, you know, forming a new organization without the U.S. and, of course, Canada, which also has a right-wing government that supports the United States on all these issues.
Yeah, and
I shouldn't say also has a right-wing government, because obviously Obama is not a right-wing government by our standards, but it is revealing that all of President Obama's allies in this hemisphere are right-wing governments. It's Canada, it's Colombia, Panama. Those are the ones that support U.S. policy in this hemisphere. That I think is another indicator of how structural this problem is.
Right.
You know, that we go from Bush to Obama, and it's, you know, it's not only the same policy, but the same right-wing allies.
Pretty amazing. Now, is Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, is she meeting with the de facto president of Honduras in this trip?
Yeah, absolutely. That's where she's going tomorrow.
Jeez.
And it's very much intended to legitimize, of course, this government, which, you know, they had an election where they have a three-month campaign period before the election. During those 3 months, you know, the independent and media were shut down repeatedly. People were killed. Any people who tried to assemble in the streets were beaten. Some were tortured. And under these conditions, you know, they went and had an election, and, of course, the Organization of American States even would not send observers. The European Union would not send observers. And here she's trying to say this election was great, and this puts us all behind us, puts everything behind us.
Oh, my.
And that is the disgrace that we're living with, I'm afraid.
Again, we're talking with Mark Weisbrot of Just Foreign Policy and the Center for Economic Policy Research. And I know you don't have a lot of time, but a crystal ball. What do you see for the future? What could the Obama administration do? Are they getting it at all, or is it just same old Nixon, Kissinger, you know, same old imperialist stuff?
Yeah, I don't see any positive change with respect to Latin America. In fact, some of the governments would say that it's even worse. You know, look at Bolivia, for example, where they're, you know, decertified in terms of the, you know, the law here that has to do with them being cooperative in the war on drugs, you know. And here's the first government Bolivia's had, you know, in decades, where there's not a single high official of the government that has anything to do with the drug trade. All these previous governments had high people high up in the government that were involved in drug trafficking, and they had no problem getting certification. And now here's the first one that doesn't, and they're decertified. So is it the same thing? Yeah, it's the same thing. The only question is whether it's worse. And I don't know whether it's going to change. I think it's possible that they'll finally realize. I mean, I do think that Obama at Trinidad was different. He was a different president than anyone we've ever had, in the sense that he actually, you know, because he comes from a different background. You know, he was a community organizer. He went there. He said, "I'm going to listen," and he did, and he got an earful. But you know, I don't think he's spending a lot of time, you know, on Latin America. We've probably just spent more time talking about Latin America than he probably spends in a week, is my guess. And so he's leaving this to people who are, you know, unreconstructed cold warriors, like Hillary. I mean, look at Hillary. She, you know, she could possibly have been president today if she wasn't so stubborn about defending her support for the Iraq War. I mean, that's pretty hardcore.
That is.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what we're dealing with.
Well, if people want to get in touch with your organization and see about helping to make some changes in Congress, helping to give some members of Congress a little backbone, maybe, you know, they could do it. Give us some websites for people to contact if they want more information about what they can do.
Sure. Well, you know, we have information at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. That's CEPR.net. That's a think tank that focuses primarily on economic issues. For those who are more concerned with foreign policy and doing something about it, there's justforeignpolicy.org.
Well, thank you, Mark Weisbrot, for being with us today. We can hope for better things, but I have a feeling that the people of South America, Central America, feel like they really were not born to follow. They were born to have self-government like anybody else. Thanks very much for being with us, Mark Weisbrot.
Thank you, Bert.